Welcome back to the 9-8s podcast hosted by yours truly, Kevin Thompson, founder and CEO of 9-8 Capital Group. Thank you guys for joining us. As I always say, subscribe to this damn channel. As I always say, go and get my book, MLB to CFP, live on Apple and Amazon. Give me questions, comments, or concerns. You can email us at info@9-8capitalgroup.com. Send us your questions. Go to the website at www.9-8capitalgroup.com. Schedule your appointment. As you know, we're here to do what? Educate, empower, and engage, and also entertain. And today we're talking to Manish Katta of Potomac. We're talking about if you should go RIA, why you should go RIA, and some of the ins and outs around it. We're going to give you a deep dive for you guys looking to make a career change. Manish, welcome to the show. Let's get it. We have Manish Katta of Potomac. Manish, let me tell you this, man. First of all, thanks for joining the show. I enjoy it. I don't respect the fact that you decided to wear that Washington, and I'm going to say the proper term, commander shirt on this show, because you know I'm a Dallas Cowboy fan. I'm from the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and I'm sorry for that ass kicking we gave you guys a couple of days ago. I apologize for that.
I mean, a missed extra point doesn't constitute an ass kicking, but we'll go ahead and roll with it.
Hey, what did they say in the Fast and Furious? Whether it's an inch or a mile, a win's a win.
A win's a win. Yeah, I get it. We'll see. Well, you'll definitely have a higher draft pick, so there you do have that in your wheelhouse.
Yeah, man. But hey, thank you for joining the 9-8s podcast. We got a lot to talk about because I like what you do on LinkedIn. It's powerful. It's quasi-arrogant to a degree, but it's good, because what I'll say is this. Your passion and compassion around what you're saying is phenomenal, man. And you're teaching, you're telling people what to do. You're informing us on how to grow our businesses. And I think it's very valuable. And that's why I wanted to have you on the show.
Yeah, no, it's not quasi arrogant. It's very arrogant, and that's okay, right? I mean, listen, I preach like the whole Jarvis does this all the time. Show me your ADV, right? It's because there's a lot of people on social media that like to give advice, like to tell you their opinion, but what have you done? And so I remember I did a Jolt presentation last year, the Jolt Marketing Conference, and the second slide was or AUM growth, yeah. Because I'm not here to sell you marketing services. I'm not here to sell you anything when it comes to marketing. It's just a matter of, you know, I like to listen to people that do well, right? Mm-hmm. And when someone's in the room that you know is doing better than me, then I close my mouth. The arrogance goes away, and I open my ears. So it's you know, the proof's in the pudding.
I respect that, because I'm right there with you. When I see people on social media, And I'll just start doing some investigations. Like, man, what's going on with this guy? This guy has all these followers and everything. See, they have like 5 million AUM. You're like, what the hell? What the hell's going on with this? The math ain't mathing. You know what I mean? So, hey.
Well, I want to do a real quick story on that, because this has really propelled us and myself. I went to a conference when we were starting to get out there and, you know, get more public with our marketing. This was probably 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I sat down, and there was 5 people on the panel. And the conference presentation was about how to grow your firm through social media. So that was huge. I wanted to go see it. And everyone's on stage, and I'm one by one going to IAPD and looking everyone up. And a combined 5 people had a little over 100 million. And I'm thinking to myself, is this all smoke and mirrors? Is the entire industry, when it comes to marketing and how you grow, smoke and mirrors?
Yeah.
And it really just opened my eyes to, you know, not chasing things and really putting the work in to see what works for you versus just listening to random people spew stuff.
Dude, that's the shiny object, man. People say, oh, social media and all this other stuff. You can have 50 million followers, but you don't have any revenue. You know what I mean? So it's a huge difference there, man. That's why I respect that, because I look at people's ADVs. Like, for example, me, my firm is just about to hit 2 years old. I started out with about 17. I bought myself. We're at 41 this year. We're slowly getting there. It's a war of attrition, right? Like, we got to retain our clients. We got to make sure they feel lovely and make sure we continue to get those referrals in. But what you've done since 2019, when I read you were 143 million then, what have you 10x'd it, 12x'd it since then? I mean, congratulations, man. I just love what you're doing. And I, my ears are open when you're on these types of things. Like when I watch you on LinkedIn, I'm like, let me listen to my man, see what he's got to say.
Well,
'Cause I'm here. I'm here to listen.
it's the iceberg meme, right? Because yes, we've had tremendous growth since 2019. This is my first job out of school in 2002. So from 2002 to 2019, that's all that, struggle, sweat equity, and things you got to go through. And a lot of times, you get a lot of praise and credit for the growth, but there's so much work that was put into it prior that people don't really, right, want to talk about. It's just the success part, right?
It's sexy, right? It's sexy, man. Oh, you're doing your thing, man. You're over $1 billion, man. Oh, this guy must have just came into this money. No, man, it's the sweat equity that people put in place. And I want to talk about this because I think it's very interesting. A lot of people are talking about going RIA, and you've said you've softened on this. You've softened on this. Talk to me a little bit about what you're softening on. Is it the approach of becoming your own RIA, or is it the approach of people don't truly understand what it actually means if they're going to be a financial advisor or a business owner?
Correct. And so I believe that self-awareness is a superpower. I think you need to be able to look at yourself in the mirror and decide who you want to be, what your pros are, what your cons are, right? And let me take it back to where I've softened. So we had an advisor that works with us, a group of them that were looking at leaving their broker-dealer, and they, pulled me aside and said, "Hey, can you walk me through the RIA side of the world? What needs to be done?" And so I'm passionate about it, so I laid out all the benefits of an RIA, right? It's the only thing I've ever known. I've only been with this RIA since college. And we went through the pros and cons, and I thought I made a compelling case. And now listen, I'm not here to promote one or the other. We do business with broker-dealers, RIAs, family offices. It doesn't matter to me. And I got the phone call back from one of the advisors, and the lady said, "I see the benefits of an RIA. My kids are young. I want to spend a lot of time with them, and I just don't want to be a business owner. I just want to be an advisor." And that hit me because, as much as I think it's not that difficult to get an RIA off the ground, some people just don't want to mess with it, right? Like, I don't mow my own lawn. I don't clean my own pool. I don't clean my house. Why not? It's easy. I can do it. I'm capable. I'm 44 years old. How hard can it be? But some people just don't want to do those things because they value other stuff. And so I don't think there's an answer. Like, people are very, they come on social media of all places and say, "This is the way." And it's just not true. Like, that's why, I mean, look at most of the money is not with RIAs, it's with broker dealers and wirehouses, right? And so you have to look at that and say, why is that? Well, not everyone wants to be a business owner. And that's the truth.
So full disclosure, I own my own RIA. I went through this, and what I did was I waited. I said, okay, let me see how this is gonna feel in the BD space right now. Let me take on more ownership of the things that I'm going to need to own before I walk off into the sunset. So I started payroll, like managing different operations, my own CRM, my own, like paying for everything myself. I said, okay, I can do this. So it took me 2 or 3 years before I felt comfortable enough to say, okay, I own this operation. Now let's go ahead and take the next step. After I got my CFP and everything, boom, and I walked off and did my own thing. I think it's truly, people have to understand there's a true ownership in this. It's not just about, hey, I'm gonna go do this and now I'm a RIA. I mean, it's a lot of stuff that goes into that, especially from a cost perspective. I mean, people don't really understand that.
No, and not just that, maybe you just don't want to, right? Like, depending on your age, right? There's so many depends here. Like, if you're an older advisor, maybe you just don't want to deal with all that right now, right? You have a great career. And listen, the broker dealers have changed a lot since earlier in my career. They have really quasi turned into RIAs, and they're offering a lot of services along those lines. So they're becoming really competitive with you going to launch your own RIA, or even going with a larger TAMP like an AssetMark or Envestnet or things like that.
Well, I don't want to name names, but the TAMPs. And by the way, I know there's a lot of TAMPs out there because, again, not saying you did anything wrong, by the way, but yeah, because I had a TAMP. I was using AssetMark for a while, quote unquote. I know I wasn't naming any names, but they were saying, why don't you just bring all that business over here? I'm like, yeah, I get it, but you're gonna charge me X, and then I'm and on $40 million. What does that look like? I can just go with the, I can just pull that piece aside, and I can do that kind of stuff myself. And again, I know people don't want to do that stuff because it's the intricacies of the business, the trading, the fee billing, and all that other stuff. But I've been doing that for years, right? Like I've taken that on, and I'm used to it by now. Eventually, I will remove myself from it. But as of right now, with 88 clients and $41 million, I can handle that. But
Yeah.
one thing I'll say,
Listen, it comes back. Look, for every person that thinks you're an idiot to pay someone to cut your lawn, there's a person who thinks you're a genius because you're buying your time back. It
yeah,
just really
100%.
depends on
100%.
you as the person and you as the business owner. And that's, I've softened myself a lot on that as well. Just the fact that, look, there is no right answer, which is why all these business models exist. It's just about what you want for yourself, for your family, for your career, and then you'll put the pieces in place. Some people don't want to have trade blotters that they have to save on their server. Some people don't want to deal with different fee schedules. They just want to click a button and be done with it. So I see both sides. And since we work with RIAs, BD advisors, on TAMPs, on RIAs individually, we get to see both sides of the business on a daily basis.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong. You're absolutely right. Because, well, let's just go here. So we talked about that part of the business, being a business owner versus being an employee, quote unquote. The reason why I decided to make this move is because, well, when I was with the BD space and I was getting a very generous payout for what I was making, I was doing about $400,000 of gross dealer concession. And depending on where you are, that could be 40%, 50%, or 60% payouts, so whatever, depending on where you are. With my company, I was getting 69% because we were very, very small at the time. I was one of their top producers. And I started thinking, man, 30% off the top, 30% off the rip, man, and $400,000, that's $120,000 a year. How can I bring that back into my own life and kind of start using that money to build an infrastructure around a business? Is compliance worth $120,000? I said, hell no, it's not worth $120,000. What value is this company giving me for $120,000? And that's when I made my decision. But what do you say about that in regard to people in the BD space right now that are thinking about going RIA and that decision? Is that a pivotal point where they're going to say, what value am I getting for the money that I'm paying?
Payouts have changed, and payouts are one of those things where it's also the whole multiple of your RIA. There's so many other layers that you don't know that's happening behind the scenes. Payouts are now, if you're on RIA business on a lot of the larger broker-dealers, you're looking at anywhere from 85 to 95 in some cases, and so payouts have increased. So but once again, it just depends, right? Like, they may be paying for your office or your assistant. They may be paying for handling payroll. So there's a lot of nuance there. But listen, I did not like any risk proposal software that we were using in the past. I decided to build our own system, and I was like, hey, I'm paying $1,000 for this thing, and now I've spent $1 million building my own. And so the point of this is, the grass is not always greener, and it depends on where you are in that cycle. For you at that level, yeah, you start doing the math, you start backing into 120K or whatever it may be. I like to take the approach of, what is my hourly wage? Right. And I start every decision based on, okay, what did I make last year? What was my K-1? What was my salary? And divide that by the number of working hours. And that's my hourly wage. And if I cannot, depending on the number of hours I spend internally doing something, if I can't justify it, then it gets outsourced. And you'll see, like, congratulations on that growth, by the way, to do 2 years like that. You're obviously moving in the right direction. But
But
once you get past
sometimes I don't feel it though, man. You know what I mean? Man, it's like sometimes I'm
it.
just like I have days like today, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, by the way.
No,
But this is
no,
what we do here. This is what we do. We have
yeah.
conversations. And some days, like this summer, I was telling people, I said, man, the summer was so just damn slow. And I felt like I was going backwards. I was like, man, there was no referrals. Maybe I had one or two referrals here and there. Nobody was moving money. And the summer just gets really, really slow. And I know it's seasonal. Our business kind of, and yours is different, of course, but it's just kind of seasonal. But yeah, that's what I felt this summer for the first time. And I was like, ah, felt a little strange, man. I felt I started feeling, I got into my feelings a little bit like Drake, man. That was me.
No, I get it. I mean, listen, and you're going to go through that, right? It's not linear. But my point is, it's easy to make certain comments and decisions on AUM levels as your business gets bigger and more complex, and you have a lot more clients to deal with. You're going to want to outsource things
Yeah,
that are
of
just
course.
not worth your time anymore, right? Because you take 100 million of a Kevin Thompson RIA and start doing the hourly math, and then 150 and 200 million, then you might circle back and say, well, maybe I don't want to do any of this, and I just want to focus on these clients, right? You're going to start having those decisions. And one of the biggest mistakes I see young advisors make is they come out of the box when they start, and they don't charge enough. And then they start figuring out when they have so many more clients, I can't service these clients that I've wanted to take care of. I just don't have enough hours in the day. And then you start making these decisions. Okay, now what happens, right? How do I figure this out going forward? Because you can't do everything yourself forever. And then that 120,000 savings starts evaporating when you start hiring people to do it for you. So there's a scale question in play as well.
Yeah, so you're talking about scale, then you're talking about adding a TAMP. And I'm like, again, I am not opposed to that, by the way. Like, I mean, the numbers have to make sense to me moving forward. But as we get larger, then of course a TAMP is going to come into play and saying, okay, how can we scale this a little bit faster? Because we have 150 to 200 client accounts. We can't do them all ourselves. So you're absolutely right on that part. One thing that comes up from a business owner perspective and a financial advisor perspective, because you can't be both, right? I mean, just realistically, if you want to run a business, run a business. If you want to be a financial advisor, be a financial advisor. But to really scale your practice, you either got to be the business owner, go get it, run your business, or a financial advisor in the background and have a what we call a lifestyle business, lifestyle practice. So tell me a little bit about, like, if a person's looking to go, what kind of decisions were they going to make if they decided, okay, do I want to go to a tuck-in or do I want to do this myself? I know we talked about business ownership before, but for example, a tuck-in, like, in what world does a tuck-in make sense for certain advisors if they're looking to join the RIA space?
Well, let me take one step back. I think lifestyle, I don't think anyone comes out and says, I want a lifestyle practice. I think what happens is they come out and I don't say everyone, but most people want to grow their business. And what happens is they figure out that they can't, and then they're like, well, I just want a lifestyle practice. So a lifestyle practice is the result of not being able to grow your business. That's not a bad thing. Just have some self-awareness on what you want. To your point, there comes as you grow, you have to make that decision. Do I want to be a business owner or a financial advisor? It's hard to do both at higher levels, right? At some point, you have to stop because you either increase your minimums drastically, take on less clients, you just don't have the time. So the tuck-in comes in, and to me, tuck-in, TAMP, it's all the same. It's just a matter of deciding how much you want to outsource and how much your time is worth, right? And typically, I see that honestly, like probably around your level to about 75, 80, 100 million, like anywhere from 50 to 100 million, you got to start making those decisions on, okay, do I really want to scale this thing above or am I happy? $100 million is a great lifestyle. I mean, you get 1% on $100 million and you keep your costs low and don't outsource and pay those extra costs. That's great. You can live your life and ride off into the sunset. But if you really want to scale and grow, one of two things has to happen. You either have to outsource a lot of the functionality, or you have to increase your minimums and work with less people. And so I think TAMPs, tuck-ins, all that stuff really just comes down to how much time do you want to do whatever it is you're doing, whether it's business owner or financial advising.
Okay, so let's talk about independence right now. So, advisors, RIAs, people wanting to go independent. When I was with the broker-dealer space, their main thing was they would always tell me, Kevin, you can't do this. You don't understand how the business is run. You don't understand the compliance side of things. I just went through my first audit. I think I was really deep, or I went overboard from my audit perspective. Like I took the numbers. I was disclosing everything. And even on my social media, all the posts, I usually add disclosures to it. They were like, you don't have to do all that because you don't talk about finance that much, right? So I think I was a little, I from a compliance perspective, I'm a little bit over the top. But I guess from an independence perspective, what's people be concerned with as they go independent, as they go to the RIA space? Like, what would you tell people? Hey, I'm looking to go RIAs. What are some of the major concerns outside of just business ownership?
Well, someone in this business a long time ago told me if you get an A plus in compliance, you're spending too much time on compliance.
Why
And
you gonna do that to me? Why you gonna say that about me, man?
and it's not, I mean, obviously you want to be compliant, right? That's part of our
Absolutely.
business. But at the same
Yeah.
time, they're not coming into your audit and they're going to find something. They're
Yeah,
going to
100%.
nitpick at something. They're
Yeah.
going to figure out a way to hit you on something. And so,
Yeah.
I think the compliance side's a little overrated in terms of being a worry. I think broker dealers have instilled this in advisors' minds that this is big, scary compliance world out there. But once again, this is that whole decision between TAMP and doing it yourself, right? Because a lot of the compliance functionality in terms of, portfolio managing or watching over the portfolio stuff, you're outsourcing in a way to the TAMP versus if you're going to do it yourself, then yeah, it does introduce more complexities in terms of keeping the books and records, your trading records, things like that. But I would say from a compliance standpoint, it's people scare you more than you should be scared out there. A lot of it is common sense stuff. The approach we take is we don't talk about our strategies really much at all on social media. We don't talk about performance or investments really at all. We take the approach that all of our marketing is eyes on brand. And then when they book meetings with us, then you get the chance to dive into the details of it. But I would say don't be too scared of the compliance side. There's a lot of folks out there that can help from a structural perspective, your books and records, making sure you're doing things. But I think it's overblown how scary that side is. Now, look, if you're using triple leverage S&P funds and Bitcoin, maybe there's a different conversation. But for the most of us that aren't necessarily doing that, I think it's overblown. That wouldn't be the reason I would not go RIA. Probably the bottom of the list of things that I'd be worried about.
So the bottom of the list. So what's your top of the list, or like what are you mainly concerned about? Is it going to be outside of compliance, just revenue? Because hey, I call you the king of EBITDA. You're the king of EBITDA, the master of EBITDA. So what is your main concern if you were going to go independent?
Yeah, so the structural side of it is not so to me, finding the custodian, books and records, the structural side of it, those are not concerns of mine at all because there's so many people that have paved the way in terms of what you can research and figure out. I think that there's two big concerns. Number one is you have to generate revenue. You have to spend your time focusing on things that generate revenue.
Lifeblood of the
Because
business, man.
here's what solves all problems. AUM.
Yeah, more
You
clients.
all it's more clients. You can have all the problems in the world and every single one of them in this business is solved by just going out and getting more AUM. And so we stress, and this is in the tech world, they talk about this, the minimum viable product, the MVP. And what that means is basically go and put something in front of your client versus trying to perfect the process. Too many
Thank you.
advisors will spend time in technology and integrations, and they'll spin these wheels. The clients don't give a shit about any of that. They just want to
God,
be helped, right? They want
tell
to
me
have.
about
So
it.
just go out and raise assets as fast as you can, and then circle back and backfill the processes and procedures that you need to improve. Don't get too caught up in that to begin with, because it just doesn't matter.
Oh my God, thank you for that. I call it chasing the shiny object. You have everybody on social media. You have these processes and this and that. It's going to give you 10x and all this. I'm like, nobody cares about that. I told myself this a couple of days ago. I said, I'm going through, like, at the end of the year, you say, okay, what's working, what's not working? And you find out you have this bloated tech stack. You're like, what the hell? Why do I have this bloated tech stack? Is it because I'm scared that if I don't have it, that my clients are going to leave me because someone else has access to it? Or is it because it's something that I'm just trying to put on our platform just to see, like, I can be taken more seriously. I'm right there with you because I think a lot of people just buy all this tech and buy all these processes and try to do all this stuff without having the clientele to deal with. I say create the problem first and then fix the problem. And then that's how you're going to be successful versus trying to solve for something that you don't even have a problem for. So you're absolutely right. You're right on that, man. I agree 100%.
It's the tech mentality, right? Like move fast and break things,
Yeah.
right? You have to get as much revenue as possible, and then that revenue will solve your processes and procedures and your tech issues, not the other way around. And too much of us rely on custodians or the technology out there to solve our problems. They're not. They're going to add to your problems. The only thing that solves your problems is AUM.
Yeah, it's gonna add to your problems because it's gonna be more cost, and the costs go up every single year, and that just
Yep.
comes right off your top line every single year. Like, oh shit, ooh,
Yep.
I those tech costs, man, I get it. And I'm dealing with one right now, and I'm trying to figure out a way to integrate these things because I know you know this. Like, you have this new software come in, and you're saying, okay, this is great, everybody's gonna want it, and you get like two clients integrated. You're like, what the hell's going on? Like, is this something that I'm saying?
Yeah,
You know how it is.
it's so integration. There's this weird part about fintech, and since we've
Yeah.
built our own technology now, we've our eyes have been open to that side of the world. So a
Yeah.
couple things that happen with fintech. Number one is there's something called vaporware, which is a technique that they all use, and what that means is they'll put out a half-assed product that's about 40% complete, and then they'll go see what kind of demand it generates.
Yeah.
And the first couple users are the guinea pigs. And if they can generate enough demand, then they'll put resources and development behind it. But very few of these people are releasing finished products, right? Which is why
Yeah.
when you go to these conferences and you see the press releases, they're typically all bullshit. And
Yeah.
it's just them trying to see what market is there, and then they'll backfill it, right? And so these integrations that are out there and combining tools, like what motivation do these people have to really create a seamless experience from one tech tool to the other that's their competitor or maybe someone? They don't really have much motivation to do it. And so you can't just approach every piece of technology as MVP. What is the minimal viable product that I can get out of this so I can, go get more clients and not you spend too much time. And I did it. This is from personal experience. I mean, I would spend months and years like fighting these people and trying to integrate and trying to get it connected. And then finally, the light bulb went off where it's like, it just doesn't work. You just got to move on.
And your clients, like you said, your clients don't give a shit about a lot of this stuff. This is all like a vanity project for ourselves. I'm 100% on board with that, man. I just think that we have to lean ourselves, especially in the beginning. Stay lean, go get that money, and everything else will backfill itself. Thank you for that conversation, man. So, a couple more questions, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
So, again, I know you're a Washington Commanders fan, and you're used to bottom dwelling, right? You're used to bottom dwelling. Now, but in our space, there's a lot of like I'm an AUM guy, man. I'm not gonna lie, I'm an AUM guy. I charge subscription services. I do hourly planning. People in our set, and I know you see this on social media, fee only versus commission and all this other stuff. I want your opinion on this because you're a very smart man. What say you around this whole debate in our industry about fee only versus commission? Like, do you give a damn, or do you give a shit at all? I mean,
Yeah,
like, what's your opinion on this?
not at all. I mean, I think, when I talk to people, I mean, you do you.
Yeah.
It's America. There's a free market. If you want to sell a commission product and there's clients that want to buy it and it passes muster in terms of compliance,
Yeah.
knock yourself out. Who am I to tell you how to run your business? And so, I think the whole argument is just it's stupid, and
Yeah.
it's usually entertained by people who don't really have much of a business.
Yes.
And I see it all the time, and I feel bad. And I used to call them out. I don't care
Yeah.
anymore as much, but it's just like, they'll come and they'll post like, oh, I got another example of AUM with 20 bad funds, and I was able to reduce this and that. And I'm like, congratulations. Like, what? Who cares? Who cares? What are you accomplishing here? What's your business doing? Like, what? It's weird to me that people are so worried about other people. Just focus on yourself. Just focus on yourself. And the funny part is when you look at our marketing, we rarely talk about what we do. And that's very intentional. You'll never see me post anything about product. Because if you're starting to do that, you've already lost. This business is about marketing your story. People want to work with people they like. People want to work with
100%.
people who are authentic and transparent and genuine. Fighting other advisors, I don't understand what you're gaining from that. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Last thing, we'll just re recap this real quick. Manish, Kata, Potomac. Tell me a little bit about like your story real quick about how you came about with Potomac and again how you grew this firm over the last 6 years, just 10x. Like, talk to me a little bit about that.
So this was my first job out of school back in 2002. And it was under previous ownership. It went through a couple ownership changes, and I stuck through the whole time. And from 2002 to about 2017, we did a decent job, 35 to about 180, 200 million, give or take. But it was kind of, plateauing, and ownership at the time and I kind of sat down, and they gave me the opportunity to buy shares at a young age. So I had 20% of the company at a young age. And then I sat down in 2017 and said, look, I need to run my own show one way or another. I was already running the company anyway. And so the owner at the time was also, interested in moving on. And so I went to the SBA, I got a check. Here's the check, no strings attached, kind of, transfer ownership, you walk away. 2017 to 2019 was challenging for us because we were trying to find our way. We lost a lot of money because a lot of broker dealers had changed the way they had us on their platform. We don't need to get into the details there, but basically we had lost probably 60 million the first year I took over. And so it was one of those things where it's like, you wanted to run your show, here it is, right? And so I had that kind of come to Jesus moment. I had two kids, my wife is pregnant. The SBA loan was about $30,000 a month, and all the cushion I built into the purchase was all gone because of the asset decline. And I had these, you go through, stresses, and as men, we don't really talk to anyone about it, including our wives or friends or family. You just kind of internalize it. And I thought, well, should I just close up shop, just leave and start something new? And those that the two the, those 2 years really taught me something about myself and how I wanted to run this business. For the longest time, under old ownership, it was really guarded, right? We didn't talk about anything. You're supposed to be this kind of way, right? And especially growing up in this business as someone who's not white, there's certain places and areas that you just have to mind yourself. And we don't, once again, we you understand, you don't have to get into it. And then I said, you know what? I bought the company. I immediately got punched in the face. What else do I have to lose? And I made the decision at that point that we were going to push forward with this mentality of being as open and transparent as possible. I don't care about old Wall Street or what it is. We're going to push hard on what we believe in and who we are, right? And I think a lot of people in the social media business helped me get to that point because I saw other people being open and vocal about it, right? And we put our flag in the ground and said, hey, we're going to start marketing. Number one, marketing as much as we can. So what I did is I gave myself a salary that would pay my bills, pay my food, my car, and every single other dollar I put back into the company in terms of running campaigns and getting out there. And we were edgy. We pissed a couple people off. And I think that's okay though, because if you're not pissing people off, your marketing is probably not
Not
effective,
working. It's
right?
not working.
And it deletes the people that don't want to work with you anyway, right? So it really reduces the audience, which is what you want to do. You want to work with those people who like working with you, who are raving fans. And then we just started hitting certain milestones. So in 2019, we ended the year about 140 million. And we just crossed about 1.8 billion the other
Hey,
day. So
congratulations, man. Seriously.
it's been good. It's been a five-year run for the ages here. And we're still, I mean, we're still, we're, we have lofty goals. We still put a ton of money back into the business. I don't have to. I mean, you can do the math. I own 90% of the company. I can just as easily, never answer my phone and be good to go. But there's other things we want to do. There's more of the industry that we want to take over. And I'm not shy about it. Like when I talk about competitors and what I want to do, I want my foot on their throat at all times. And I want to go out there and I want to raise assets. And I don't apologize for it. That's my goal. Obviously, delivering a good product and making clients happy, those are table stakes. But besides that, in terms of running a business, when they say, what's your AUM goal? My answer is more.
I'm right there with you, man. Thank you so much. I love the fact that you're writing straight to the point. Like you don't put this I guess this hope and a dream. I've been at agencies in the past where they're just saying, "Oh, we lives and families saved and all this other stuff in the form of revenue." I just say, "No, man, we need more revenue. We need more assets under management. We need more asses in seats. That's how you make this business run." Last moment. Hey, give us some of your final thoughts, man. We talked about people going RIA, why they shouldn't, what some of the things they're going to look out for. What's the last words from Maniscalco here that he's going to tell these people if they're going to want to move or if they're wanting to be a business owner? What kind of advice would you give them?
I think I would tune out a lot of the noise that's out there, and the self-awareness thing is huge, and a lot of us lack self-awareness.
100%.
You have to be honest with yourself. It's the only person that you're going to be honest with, if at the end of the day, the only person that knows you the best, maybe besides your mama, is you, right? And so look in the mirror and decide what you want to be. You know, if you want to scale, how much time do you want to dedicate to it? Are your kids young? Do you want to spend, you know, hours at soccer practice, or do you want to be a business owner worried about accounting software and healthcare and all that stuff? You have to decide that first and foremost, right? Who do you want to be as a business owner? And then that path will, everything will fall into place once you decide that, because then you can say, all right, I have the time to maybe do some of these things myself. Let's go RIA. I don't have the time. Let me outsource all this to a TAMP and focus on marketing and seminars or whatever. You know, that I think that's the starting path of anything is self-awareness and figuring out what you want to be. And then you just got to head down and go after it. You know, it's never going to be easy, and there's never going to be any layups. And I would also, for a younger advisor, I would stay the hell off social media, because last time I checked, comments and likes don't pay my bills.
Comments and likes don't pay your bills, but they do make you feel good. They do make
Yeah,
you feel good.
and I just gave you the
There
title of the podcast,
you go.
by
Hey, man, it's kind of Potomac. Thank you for joining the 90s podcast, my friend. I appreciate this. And by the way, I understand and I feel for you in 27, 2018. Because you guys were bottom dwellers back then. And I get it, man. You have to go through all that with your business, having to watch NFL football in the NFC East every single day, watch the Cowboys reign. It's gotta be tough, man. I understand
I'm gonna send you a meme that I saw the other day that listed all the teams that won a home game in your stadium this year,
Oh, here we go.
including soccer and college teams and all and a concert. But there was one logo missing from that list. I'll make sure I send you that once I find it.
Thank you for joining the 90s podcast, my friend.
All right, thank you.
We had Manish Katta from Potomac talking about the RIA space, how comments and likes don't make you money. That's a good name for a podcast. Subscribe to the 90s podcast. Go and get my book, MLB to CFP Live on Apple and Amazon. You have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at info@9icapitalgroup.com. Send us your questions. Go to the website at www.9icapitalgroup.com. Schedule an appointment. As you know, we're here to do what? Educate, power, and engage, and also entertain. And today was an entertaining conversation. This guy has grown his business from 140 something million back in 2018, 2019, to over $1 billion now. He's doing his thing. He's running a nice TAMP there. We talked today again about the RIA landscape and the difference between being a financial advisor and a business owner. Thank you guys for joining us. Stay humble, stay safe, my friends. I'll see you again soon.